The views and opinions of the host and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure.
Hands to the heavens, no man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtaposition in us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, his spirit revisited us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. How we walk through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down and we stand up. Shots, we on the ground. The camera panned up. King pointed to the mountaintop and we ran up.
One day, when the glory comes.
Good morning, welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9. You know my voice already, it's Levan Miller. Thank you so much for being with me. Thank you so much for letting me be with you. I don't know what it is that you do, but whatever it is you are doing, I'm happy that you're doing that do and that you're doing that do with me. All right? I've got a pretty decent guest in the studio this morning. They've put a lot of colorful pictures on the front page of the newspaper. You can go check it out in this morning's Guardian. The National Health Insurance Authority, or the NHIA, as they are affectionately called, they're celebrating an anniversary. I just happen to have the chairman here. I didn't bring him here in his capacity, but there's no way I could have all this colorfulness on the front page of the newspaper and we not at least talk about the NHIA 2 minutes of the show. So Dr. Robin Roberts joins me this morning, and we're talking about a host of things, right? If you know, he's one of the most noted physicians in the country, particularly in the area of urology. And Sunday is Father's Day, right? And for whatever it's worth, your fixtures have a lot to do with where you fall on the parental side, all right? So, but for the fixtures you have, you may have been a mother, right? And we would have celebrated you and me. So we're going to talk a little bit about my men health. But also, if you know, if you followed, I had with me Captain Glenn Bain, and we talked about professions in the maritime field, and of course, in his infinite wisdom, as he often does, he offered me great counsel. Dr. Robert said, "Man, you talking about the maritime field? There are a myriad of jobs and professions that Bahamians are missing an opportunity on, simply because they do not know." And so I have him come in with me this morning. We can talk about a few of those things. The lines are open. You can talk to him. The numbers are 323-623-2325-4316-325-4259. You can text me on 4224796. Dr. Robin Roberts, good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. Good to be sitting around the table with you again. It's been a little while.
It's been a while. I haven't tell you, he's one of the smartest people I know for sure.
We miss you on the National Health Insurance Board and our trips going through the family islands.
Oh, yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, that was good times. See, you all are at the 4-year mark, 100,000 enrollments. That's a pretty decent thing.
That's a quarter of the population.
What does that translate into though? Like, where are we exactly? Just in a brief overlay with NHS.
We are well on our way to advance healthcare in this country. We are on our way where we can actually define what the healthcare issues are in the country, mm-hmm. able then to design programs to intervene mm-hmm. at those sites, and electronic healthcare records, we can actually trace, we can document, mm-hmm. and we can plot to see where we come from, what is the progress, and we can measure what we are doing. In simple terms, as I always say, you can't manage what you can't measure. Mm-hmm. And so for the first time, we will be having a fantastic measurement tool, our electronic health records, and we will be able to measure where we are, the progress we've made, and how great we are implementing the programs to make a difference.
Mm, I see. I see here they say that there's a diverse demographic of people affected by NHI. There are some 3,200 Bahamians under the age of 5 and that's some right. 13,000 Bahamians over the age of 65.
Absolutely.
And so NHI is colloquially doing what we would call touching the baby on the breast, right? As well as touching those with their foot very near to the grave, right?
I would like to say we are managing our country from the cradle straight to the end or the grave.
Yeah, yeah.
So straight through, we will be with them
and
we will be able to try our best to keep them healthy.
So whether you are two or toothless,
absolutely,
NHI is for you.
They will come when we incorporate dentistry such that when you're 60 and 70, you wouldn't be toothless.
Well, see, there you have it. Dr. Robin Roberts is my guest. So, Doc, okay, so the EHR, it is officially completed the rollout, all of the electronic health records.
In fact, it's going tremendously well. The physicians are coming on board, to see that over 80% of our enrollees are already on board, that the patients have access, or the beneficiaries, patients apply, you're sick.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say the beneficiaries
right.
are people. That they have access, they can go on their platform. Mm-hmm. There's a patient platform. But I think what is even more important for us is that the physicians now, they can incorporate this into their practice.
Okay.
And during the pandemic, they've been using our telemedicine services on the electronic health record.
Okay.
So they've been keeping contact with their patients even though they can't go there.
Right.
And so this is a tremendous advantage.
And for the people that aren't aware, I mean, just because we use these acronyms, you don't know, the EHR is an electronic health record system. What it does is it changes the pathway of care. It monitors the pathway of care. Robin Roberts presents to me in January. His blood pressure was, I don't know, very, very high. He came back to me in June. His blood pressure wasn't so bad after I put him on this medication. We're able to track where is his progression or digression with regards to his response to medication. Where should we take his pathway of care from there? If he has to go to another physician with access to the EHR, the electronic health record, is able to look at Robin Roberts' entire case study from the time he presented at a physician until whatsoever time he leaves the system.
So we're just moving from the paperwork into the digital world.
Right.
And so that means that quite a number of individuals in the system can access the digital their digital records in real time. But I just want to assure the public that we have the highest level of security in terms of having access, who can access it, when they can access it, and also to have the patient to give consent for those who might want to access it and they don't have any authority to do that.
Mm.
And it's well protected.
Mm.
And so I want them to be assured that while it's digital, it's not like social media where anyone can send around information on WhatsApp.
Right, the security portion of it is pretty tight. All right, well, Doc, so let's switch gears a little bit. I know that your hat is as the chairman of the NHI, and I think you all are doing a marvelous job here. I've got one question before we move on, though. Someone is saying that getting bookings with NHI physicians are kind of difficult. They said that they went to see their provider in May. There are no more available dates with their provider until December. I don't know that could happen.
Well, let me put it to you this way. The physicians have contracted with us to deliver the highest level of care that they can do.
Mm-hmm.
And having access to your physician on a timely basis is very important.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the beauties also is that the patient has a choice.
Mm-hmm.
If you find that your provider is not providing the service that you want, then you can change them.
Right.
Him or her.
Right.
So if at the end of 3 months, you can go back and say, listen, I've been trying to get in contact with this person get an appointment for the last 2 months and 3 months, and I haven't.
Right.
A, you can change, but B, more important for us, we will voice that complaint.
Right.
And we will say to the physician, that is unacceptable.
Correct.
The other thing what our medical records allows us to do is that we have a patient response in portal.
Mm-hmm.
So what we have done is we said, listen, at the end of 3 months or 6 months, we now have a profile whereby the patient scores his physician.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can say, listen, we looked at the last, at all our physicians, and they're getting a 10 rating out of 10.
And you're getting a 4.
And you're getting a 4.
Yeah, we now need to figure out if we want to keep
what's your problem?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that is that, and that ultimately makes a difference between what happens in the public sector versus what now happens in the private sector versus what NHI is now building. So NHI, and you always said this, Robin Roberts, I steal this from you all the time. We are building, what is it, private health? What is it? We're making, bringing private health care to public facilities or something to that effect. But it means that we were changing the experience surrounding the way we administered healthcare.
We want to increase the capacity to deliver healthcare services. We know that the government services are limited, and so we can do so by funding the healthcare, but it's being delivered in the private sector.
Every patient, a
Every
private patient.
Every patient becomes
That's what
a
it
private
is. See that? I knew I was going to get the slogan now. So where are we now, Dr. Roberts? I know that among some of the things that they were treating were end-stage kidney disease, or some of the things that they proposed to treat was end-stage kidney disease, along with another host of other things. I know that the funding never really came through for that, but you did move to a new phase of advanced primary care.
Yeah.
How does that look when we consider what we had versus what we now have?
Well, we've really expanded in terms of what we're doing. But I think that the first major change I want you to appreciate is what the transformation is.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, we are looking at providing a higher degree of efficiency, okay, and impact in the delivery of care.
Mm-hmm.
So when we look at the government services and we see that primary care services are provided on one instance by the Public Hospital Authority,
mm-hmm.
on another instance by the Princess, by the Public Health Service, on another instance by the, even in terms of the paying out of pocket.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking and then in Freeport, we have another healthcare system where all the primary, secondary, and tertiary care services come under one.
Okay.
So we got quite a number of primary care centers being managed by the government, but they're operating in silos.
Mm-hmm.
We are duplicating and replicating services.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we can bring them all under one governance,
mm-hmm.
such that we can be more efficient, it's like a merger. When you do that, we can have a better results. So that is the first thing that this whole transformation process is all about.
Okay.
Secondly, again, another aspect of it is you realize in one instance where the government is paying, and I wanted to bring that point back, where the government is paying for the services to be provided, in this instance now it's the patient who is carrying the funds. Because the patient decides where they want to go and who is the patient that and who are the providers that they want to have.
Mm-hmm.
So now we are looking to really have patient-centered care.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, when you look at the government services, all hospital-based, or it's all the center-based, whereby come to see a doctor here, I got to go to a specialist here, I have to go to a pharmacy over here, I have to go to... So you end up going to 5 and 6 different places.
Mm-hmm.
We want to be able where, when at the end of the day, when you come to one place, it's one-stop shop.
Yeah.
So everything is centered around you. Okay, so that's what I want to look in terms of our overall intent.
Mm-hmm.
But then we're also looking at we're expanding the laboratory services we're providing.
Right.
We're expanding the...
And you do that
per patient,
free of charge.
That's right.
Right.
Similarly, the imaging services, because we are now bringing our obstetrics on board
mm-hmm.
so that individuals of pregnant females can now be monitored during their pregnancy. And all of those ancillary services and the investigations that they need to have, that'll be available to them. And so we're seeing a greater degree of services being delivered, not only in quality, but also in quality.
Where is NHI with the delivery of pharmaceuticals? I mean, I know that if you consider healthcare is a like triune fight, right? So you need physician facility, you need laboratory facility, and then we've got to find, because I mean, you could go see the doctor 1,000 times.
Yeah.
If he don't give you nothing, you're still right where you start.
Well, we realize in the country right now that pharmaceutical services are under the auspices of the NIB.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we are looking at is we need to have a real interface between NIB and NHI, so we don't have an issue whereby someone who has NHI services and now when they need to go and get NIB services, that there is that we're working at cross purposes.
Mm-hmm.
We need to have this seamless process. Again, this is a part of our transformation process, engaging our stakeholders.
Okay. So NHI can take me from doctor visit to laboratory visit to the point that I'm medicated? Or are that, you, or have we is, not yet?
Those, no, no, no. Those are the things that we hope to incorporate in our primary transformation
okay.
Program.
But we've got 2 out of 3 now.
Yeah, I think you're working there.
2 out of 3. Okay, we'll take 2 out of 3. We'll take 2 out of 3. Anyway, so Dr. Roberts, you're a urologist. It's very important to men's health. What we seem to be having still a lot of issues. You hear Dr. Sands yesterday talked about the nurses leaving the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, particularly because they're underpaid. But he talked about the work that many of them do in the dialysis care, et cetera, et cetera. What from your view as a physician of many years practicing, what would you say is the health state of the male population around you?
What I want to do is get someone to appreciate, or get the audience to appreciate how I come about seeing this.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to appreciate seeing it through the eyes of a physician.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The fact that I'm a urologist gives me I focus a little better. The first thing I noticed working in the Princess Margaret Hospital was that the high level of trauma that we see. Mm-hmm. Road traffic accidents coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Individuals being stabbed and shot. In fact, one of the statistics I used from Dr. Science in doing his work, we found that prior to the pandemic, every day at least one person is stabbed or shot, comes to the emergency room.
Mm.
And in 80% to 90% of the cases, the problem is the patient who is being stabbed or shot is a male. And in 80 to 90%, the perpetrator
is a male.
It's a male.
Wow.
You look at the car accidents. I want to look at the fact that up to 20% to 30% of the page people who get in car accidents and that are injured, again, predominantly males.
30%. So that means women are terrible drivers.
No. Predominantly males.
Go on.
Okay. And then, so when we look at the healthcare parameters,
mm-hmm.
and we look from hypertension to diabetes to obesity to high cholesterol levels, predominantly men.
Mm-hmm.
You look then at the issues, hey, what's happening inside the prison? Why is it 90% of them are men?
Mm-hmm.
Why is it that when we look at drug addiction, okay, in terms of who is taking the cocaine, who comes in with overdose, why is it predominantly men?
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the statistics of suicide, mm-hmm. Dr. Allen showed that men are committing suicide 13 times more mm-hmm. likely to be a man committing suicide.
Mm-hmm.
So why is it that in all of these areas of healthcare that we see in the Bahamas, male seems to be we are the person at highest risk,
mm-hmm.
and we're causing a lot of damage to the system in terms of the burden on healthcare. The resources that we need, the amount of money is being spent. You don't appreciate that when you're involved in a car accident and you damage and you get a fractured spine, for example, and you're paralyzed.
Mm-hmm.
You realize that, you're running up $250,000 out back in an eye
mm-hmm.
over the period of a year. And so we have to look back and say, why is this happening to the men? Why is it the men? So that's how I started to see.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The other side of the coin came from a different perspective. I happen to be on our medical faculty, University of West Indies in the right. PMH. Over the last 20 years since we have been in the country producing physicians, we produced some 500 plus doctors.
Okay.
80% of them are women. I look at the graduation at College of the Bahamas, same thing.
Yeah, and if you go to one of them nice graduations.
I am looking.
Yeah, ain't no man there either.
I go a little down more. I look at high school. The same amount of boys, the same amount of girls entering the primary school.
Mm-hmm.
But when we realize when it comes to graduate, only seem as if, some significant numbers of them who drop out and never reach. Again, they're the men.
Mm-hmm.
At the time of graduation, it's the women are leading the class, 70%, 80%. And then you have to say, my goodness, if they're not getting educated. And we know today, in today's world, why we might say that we need to have, that it doesn't matter whether you have a degree or not, the evidence is clear.
Mm-hmm.
People who have higher education get better jobs and a better pay mm-hmm. and have a higher standard of living. So what's happening to our men? So I'm not talking about just the physical component in terms of how you're doing, if your blood pressure's against you. I'm looking at your whole socioeconomic development. Okay? Now, the backside of that is that, so where are the females going to get their mate? Where are they going to find one? When my female doctors graduate now, you know, you like to say you should be equally yoked, as the Bible says. See? So where are you going to find a husband that you find?
If you're all graduating them 8-1 or 8-2,
So the ramifications of this that we are seeing now, okay, it's we are beginning to pay the price. We're beginning to pay the price because one time ago, 50, 60 years ago, when we lived in the community, and we actually, the village raising a child was, that's how we live. You know, you knock next door and say, Titter, we run out of sugar. Could you lend us a cup of sugar, you know? Your mother just say, I'm going out. Could you look after the children?
Right.
Till they come back. That community's gone. You know, you had Mr. Brown on the corner that if you did something that he would reprimand you and your parents would, you know, would back him up.
Come double it up, right.
That has changed completely as we move into a society where we live in the outskirts now. And so, therefore, your child might be home all day. The television's raising him. And so, we have to look and see what is... We are losing our men. We are losing our boys. They're not reaching to become men.
But haven't we always... I mean, Dr. Roberts, I don't think it is a new thing. Dr. Robin Roberts is my guest, in case you're just joining me. It isn't a new thing, though, for Bahamian men to find themselves in positions where education isn't at the fore of... you know, where they were. I tell the story all the time. I knew a lady, wonderful gem of a human being, Geraldine Black, 96 years old. My grandfather, 96 years old. And one of the things that I found so delightful about talking to Ms. Black was that literally the woman could recall dates from 1951. And she could tell you it was the 10th of May, 1951. It was a Tuesday at 12. And she seemed so much more vested and invested. When I speak to people like my granddaddy, his line of thought is quite always the same, which is, I was busy working. The only thing they ever found for us to do was work. I didn't have time to figure out what was happening, what the day was. I put my head down, and when I wake back up, it was time to go to work again. And so Bahamian men are, in my estimation, exactly where we were then. We have become so saddled with the burden of just life alone that many of these men just spend time, they don't have time for education because there's some existential circumstances that is created that forces him into the workforce. So college isn't an option for him. He has to go and become an income earner. That is basically where our society is.
That was okay, 50 years ago. But let's look at where we are now today. First and foremost, in the old days, when you went to school, you learned your basic 3 hours. And then when you reach about 14, 15, I mean, when you reach around 10, 11, the few of you who made the grade, and I have to say made grade in inverted commas, it just means that you were a little more advantaged. And so you creamed off the top, and some of you went to high school, but most of you who didn't, most of us would have gone and into a technical school. You learn a trade. And at that time, when you wanted your mate, they tell you, what's the first thing you want to do? First thing you want to do is buy a piece of property. Okay, next you're going to build a house. Then you want to have a wife. So by the time you go there, you're already put in a position whereby the dad's going to ask, you know, where you put my daughter? Fast forward now, 50 years later. First of all, when you go into the workplace, if you took that approach, you're not competing with men now. The women in the workforce too. And our data have shown that today, okay, and at least over the last 5-6 years, that women are now surpassing men or have surpassed men in terms of employment. So more women, they're more likely to employ the women than the men because the women are shown to be consistent. They seem to be more trustworthy. And so all the good character, all the good the personalities you would like to have an employee, the women seem to have it as opposed to the men. In the old days when you look at strengths, you know, we don't need that now. We have power tools. Okay? So the amount of jobs that are available in the workforce for you, that's reduced significantly. The type of jobs have changed now. Mm-hmm. They want you to be computer literate. Mm-hmm. Okay, you need to be very literate to some extent. If you haven't finished school, you haven't done that. Mm-hmm. And so you, and then now thirdly, as we are raising our boys, one of the things we didn't have to worry about in the past, the influences from the outside, the influences of social media, the influences of a drug culture, the influences of a gun culture, the influences of a gang culture. We didn't have those things to worry about. Mm. The community protected you. And so now what you find, because they'll tell you, even when you look at kids come from well-off families, that they are susceptible to being in with their friends and their gangs. And so the men are slowly being, but surely marginalized. And we have, as we see today, a significant number of our employment is predominantly by men, mm-hmm. predominantly by younger men as it's increasing. And they have no career paths.
So this notion of a patriarchal society or a heavily handed patriarchal society that people seem to continue to use as a posture then must be inaccurate. If all of what you're saying to me, Dr. Roberts, is true, and we are losing our boys to gang violence, car accidents, and accidental deaths more than we're losing women. Women are becoming the more heavily employed. Women are, according to you, and you sit well enough at the university to know, the matriculation rate of women through the college versus men is 80% or 60% higher. Then technically, you sound to me as though we now live in a society where there is almost an onslaught attack against the male gender, the mind of the male gender, because I can only begin to imagine psychologically,
yes.
what is it doing to us and how is it altering us? And you've now pointed a different thought in my mind, which is forget the man's health. I mean, that in itself is one thing, but where is the mental state of the average man walking around in the behavior? If he cannot provide for his family, if he hasn't had an opportunity to education because he simply had to go and live life, and coupled with that, while he's trying to make ends, there's probably someone with a loaded pistol trying to kill him in the meantime. Where does that put, in your estimation, Dr. Roberts, the mental aspect, health aspect of males in the Bahamas?
Well, the truth of the matter is that it's the patriarchal society that has destroyed us, men.
Mm.
Okay? You know, I always like to talk about where we are with regards to our behavior. What is the reality?
Mm-hmm.
On the one hand, in our nice Christian society, I give this to a lot of my talks all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I said, good, what is a man? What you expect? In the Sunday school, what would they tell me? Listen, a man should be loyal. A man should be trustworthy. A man should provide for his family. A man should have leadership. A man should protect his family. All those good and nice things that we would like to instill in our men. The truth of the matter is I have a daughter and a son.
Mm-hmm.
They're the same qualities I want to see in my daughter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's the first thing.
Yeah.
The second thing, though, is we know in reality that that's not the case. When we get outside on the docks, on the blocks with the fellas, we know what we consider to be a real man.
Mm-hmm.
And that's terrible for our health because real men don't go to the doctor.
No.
Real men, when something hurts, you're not supposed to complain because real men are supposed to bear pain.
Right.
Okay? Real men don't, you're not supposed to take medication. In fact, what you're supposed to be taking is a good drink.
Yeah.
And you're supposed to know and hold your liquor.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay? And you know, you're a lover. You got to have children. You got to have women. You don't talk. You don't communicate. Real men don't talk.
Right.
You know what I mean? You, in fact, if she makes too much noise, she'll pat her up a bit.
Yeah.
So we know that aspects of a real man that exists, that macho part of us.
Yeah.
And that's what's killing us.
Mm.
Because we don't want to go to see the doctor on a regular basis.
Mm.
We don't want to sit down and talk about those things. Now, put that, what we want to see a real man to be, put that in the category of how we raise our boys. We raise our boys in this box, in the man's box. So what mm-hmm. we saying to our boys when you get, listen now, you got to be like us.
Mm-hmm.
We want you to be strong.
Mm-hmm.
We want you to be, if you get involved in a fight, you got to be tough.
Yeah, I want you to be the thousand.
Don't come home crying.
Be the thousand.
Yeah, we want you to be cocky. Mm-hmm. We want you to be good and smart. So we want our boys to be just like us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And so when we raise him in a man's box now, and you say, listen, you can't be no soft fella now.
Yeah.
You can't be like mommy.
Right.
And we start to tease you. We start to bully you.
Mm.
Okay? So you might have a lot of fellas who don't have that personality to be put inside this closed box space of how a man's supposed to be.
Mm.
Now just suppose, okay, that he says, well, you know, I got to be this way, you know, even though I got to be with the boys in showcases. But what we got him in a boot camp because he got this period of time in which he has to become a man.
Correct.
But if he doesn't, if he can't cope, if they can't fit the model, okay, then so what happens to them during that period of time? They become frustrated. You know, they emotionally decompensate.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And so they're now in a period where they're more likely, when they're put in the corner, I decided to say, I can't take this anymore.
But we were not always a society. And I hear you, Dr. Roberts, right?
Yeah.
I am the grandson of a woman with 14 sons.
Yes.
You know, I keep telling people, we was the hardest family through my corner to beat because we was an army.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And
see you, what you say now?
Yeah.
You, and you tell me that. That's right.
And you be tough.
Yeah.
And when you fall off the wall, somebody say, hey, shut up. Hey,
yeah.
Get up.
Right. Yeah.
But I don't imagine that did any damage to me. I feel fine. I don't know where we got this society from now where everybody has an emotional need for affirmation at every single turn. I look at it, it's new to me. I don't know this new world, right? As well as, right, while I get it, men in the Bahamas are trained to take abuse. Our mommy teaches it to us.
Yes.
Our daddy teaches it to us.
Yes.
Our big brothers teach it to us. You will take abuse. But
does it mean that we are coping internally? So what do I do, right? I start to smoke.
Mm-hmm.
I start to take some drugs.
Mm-hmm.
I start to drink.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I slowly begin to isolate myself.
Mm.
And I reach a stage where when I retaliate, I beat the woman.
Mm-hmm.
I said, listen, I can't cope with this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? In fact, this is the only dominance I have over her because I'm physically stronger.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And then when I get in an argument with one of the guys,
mm-hmm.
I shoot him.
Right.
Okay? And then when I get an argument in myself, I kill myself.
Mm. And you think that's where we've... But
No. I'm not saying... All I'm saying to you is this.
Mm-hmm.
Here are the facts.
Mm.
Okay? That's what I'm telling you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying here are the facts. How did we get here?
Mm-hmm.
How did we get here where almost every week we might have one or two murders in our society?
But
how did we get, and why is it predominantly men?
But Doc, I think there is a very thin line. I've got boys, right?
Yes.
I mean, I tell my son all the time, shut up, stop crying, stand up. Like, you know, life don't give you a chance to cry, mister. Yeah. All right? So I'm not saying don't cry. What I want you to do is to pack your emotions up and keep walking with them. All right?
I'm seeing.
And it is because... I think we live in a world now, and my friends all hate me for saying it, where we are raising momsy-pomsy boys. I'm ex-military, you know
yes,
that.
Uh-huh.
I remembered entering the military. I remembered running into people like Oral Wood and Derek Richardson and Clifford Scavala. And it was, you get off your eggs and on your legs because this is the military, right?
Yes.
These days, I had the commander of the Defense Force with me the other day, and he said, you know, we're going to have promotional exercises where we have to call people in and talk to them and tell them that we're gonna meet. And I can't. That's not the planet I grew up in.
Yeah, let me show you the other planet that you grew up in, and then I'm gonna come back to what you say.
Mm-hmm.
We had our community groups
mm-hmm.
that instilled discipline in the men.
Sure.
Okay. We had the community groups that allowed bonding. So we grew up with the Boy Scouts
mm-hmm.
and the Boys Brigades and the Royal Ambassadors. So we had our groups. Now, find out where are they now, today.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I took my son out of Boy Scouts when they had a female group leader.
Mm.
Okay?
Mm.
So, where in which routinely, particularly in the over-the-hill communities, we all had our organizations where men were trained to be men.
Mm-hmm.
Now, very few of them exist today, at least in a proportion.
And as a consequence... So we are raising effeminate men.
I don't know if we're raising effeminate men, but what we are raising, you see, again, you are exactly doing what I said earlier. You are now looking at raising the men in a box. You're saying if you're not raised this way.
Uh-huh.
So that is great, provided that I can cope with that.
Mm.
Okay, you find a lot of men, that is not their style.
Mm.
Okay, they might be whereby they're in a home. Their mother took good care of them. Mm-hmm. Their mother was very affectionate. Their mother showed them how to cook and how to clean the house. They don't mean that they are less of a man.
No, I agree. Right. I agree.
So now, however, when you get around your boys and you and this is something that you prefer to do as opposed to be with them, mm-hmm. then they try to look and say, "Are you a sissy boy? You're in the wrong place."
Mm-hmm.
All right. So you are now looking you have a conflict in yourself.
Mm.
You have a toxic environment in which you've grown up, mm-hmm. at least from an emotional point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the series in this whole issue is, okay, how do we resolve conflicts?
Mm-hmm.
From time immemorial, we resolve conflicts by violence.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That's how, you know, that's how we had the armies.
Right.
A nation to overpower nations.
Yeah, he who have the most gun win the fight.
Absolutely. And similarly, that's how we had our patriarchal society. That's how men became dominant, because we were the most powerful.
I have a text right here. Dr. Roberts is asking me, do you think there is a conspiracy against black boys?
Let me say to you that I don't agree with you, but I want to frame it differently from you.
Okay.
In North America, it is very clear.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they have a. There's a excellent description of what we call the fourth grade syndrome.
Okay.
Okay. And what they have shown is that they can look at the reading ability, the literacy of the boys in the fourth grade, and if they can't read, if they're not at the performance level where they should be, they can project what will happen to them every grade along the way, and they will end up more likely in prison.
Wow.
They have been able to show on the capital markets that where you have in America, that you have that prisons are on the stock exchange, that they can predict how many prisons they would need on the basis of the level of literacy of the black boys in the school.
Mm.
They call it the cradle to prison pathway. So when you look at a system in America where for black men, and they've shown us, right, the black boys in the schools, they have the highest amount of dropout rates, the highest amount of suspensions, they're less likely to form, they're more likely to get in the classes for those who are poor, who develop in slowly. So that's institutionalized racism.
But I don't think we, in a predominantly now, black country.
Now that's why I'm saying a predominantly black country,
right. We
can't make that claim. However, the system is already in place whereby we can say, what's the difference between the public schools and the private schools?
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't the private, you know, yes, we do have individuals who shine very well in the public system,
mm-hmm.
but do they represent the majority?
No. They do not.
Okay. When we look at the GCL results that we have, yes, you will see that the private schools do much better than on average than those in the public.
As a matter of fact, thank God for the private schools because God knows what the national average would be.
Okay. So that is why I'm saying one can make the case that this is institutionalized, the disparities in education.
But it doesn't stop. It doesn't stop, Dr. Roberts. And I subtly share the text writer's position, and I will tell you what I find interesting. Men are under an attack of their image, right? And this is a Levin Miller thesis, right? If you look at the way they've changed our clothing, they no longer want me to dress like a normal man, like a regularly perceived man. What do I mean? I have a size 36 waist. Can you tell me why I cannot get my ankles through the bottom of this pants that can fit my waist? It doesn't make sense to me, all right? Can you tell me why, as a man, I cannot get my hand in the pocket of my pants, except you want me to look like something that I am not, that I am not. Then there is the whole notion that black men are somehow causing there to be a proliferation in crime because we make terrible fathers. And I submit, all throughout my life, I do not know of a black man, even if he had to do so secretively, that doesn't take care of his children. I do not personally know a black man that doesn't take care of children. Now, I get it. I hear there are women out there all the time who claim that the father of their children is not involved. And I will tell you this. I know of instances where the man taking care of his children and somebody else's children. So even in the instances where there was a father missing, a black man stepped up and filled that gap. And I'm sure you saw a lot of it, particularly in your time, because you lived in the Bahamas where you grew up in a house with a child that you didn't know. She wasn't your sister, mm-hmm. but she grew up like your sister.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but that is never the way it is reported. It is reported that we are abandoning our women and we are leaving them to raise the children and we are the cause that the crime is so high because we are raising fatherless sons. And I don't know if that is the truth. Also, we also live in the Bahamas, in my mind, in a country that punishes a man. If he decides to be a terrible spouse, this country will punish him as a father. My five-year-old, six-year-old now, had an accident. Took him to the hospital. I am in possession of the child with his identification and mine. The question the physicians continue to ask me is, where is the mother of this child? Which has no bearing on his medical issue, which has no bearing on the financial issue, because it's me who could pay.
Mm-hmm.
What is the purpose of you punishing me? Because I've chosen not to be a husband. What is the purpose now of you punishing me, this society, as a father? And I think that is something we have to look at, because we are creating a bigger problem, Dr. Roberts.
Yeah, okay, well, let me put it this way. I want to agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
Only on the point that we do have some good fathers.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the father and mother might be separated, okay? We do have fathers who pick up their children every weekend
mm-hmm.
and take them places,
mm-hmm.
all right? We do have fathers to assume the role that they should do that. But at the end of the day, this is not the majority. These are not the men that we hold up to be the model in our society.
Mm.
Okay? The hardcore facts is that we have in our country some two out of every three family is a one-parent family
mm-hmm.
where that one parent is predominantly the female.
Mm-hmm.
And what does the facts show? The facts show that in families where there's a one parent and the mother is the child, I'm not saying that we can't be successful. They can't be successful in raising that child. I'm one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm saying to you, when we look at the bigger picture, the evidence is clear. I just pull this out. The crisis of fatherhood.
Mm-hmm.
In homes where there's no father, 63%, those who commit suicide, 63% of them come from father's home.
Mm.
And those that are homeless and runaway children, 90% of them come from father's home.
Mm.
Where they have behavioral disorders, 85% of them from father's homes. Where you have high school dropouts, 71% of them from father's home.
Mm.
And the list goes on. That when you
nobody is invisible fathers.
And no, I'm just trying to tell you.
Because if I don't know none and you don't know none.
No. Because the men are not undertaking the responsibility,
mm-hmm.
okay, and raising the child.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we had a great night's dance, okay? There was no expectation for you to get pregnant,
mm-hmm.
okay? We agreed that we were going to do something.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when the child comes, the child didn't ask to be here.
That was a breach of contract. Yeah.
So therefore, at the end of the day, you have a responsibility in raising this child.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying to you that what the evidence shows is that predominant number of men who are in those situations do not undertake the responsibility that they should. That is why the data shows us that we are seeing a part of the problem, why we are seeing all these record numbers that I told you about in terms of men engaged in violence, men engaged in suicide, 90% of our men locked up inside prison. Maybe we are more involved in taking drugs, etc.
Mm.
I'm just saying, your point is taken. But when you look at the real facts, when we start to say we are looking at things that are statistically significant,
mm-hmm.
when you look at the numbers,
mm-hmm.
you will find that your group is in a much smaller group. I'm not saying that the laws shouldn't be changed. I'm mm-hmm. not saying that men don't have the equal access they should have. Yes, you're quite right in those things. But when you look at the bigger picture, we are finding that the men are not undertaking the responsibilities that they should do.
Someone had asked Dr. Roberts what he thinks about teenagers smoking weed and how THC destroys the underdeveloped brain. Ask him if THC is stored, ask him if THC is stored in your testicles and does it affect semen, I imagine, procreation. Let me ask the other question. Great show as usual. I think we use fatherless homes as a scapegoat for social behavior. I equally partially agree with that, and I will can I equally partially agree? I partially agree strongly. Because not living in your mommy house,
yes,
or not living in the house with your
yes.
mommy,
yes.
don't mean that I'm absent from your life.
Yes.
I mean, I know very good daddies.
One of the things that we have in our country is we still have the extended family.
Yes.
Okay? So I'm saying that the single parent mother relies on that extended family. But in a lot of instances, our family structures have been dismantled.
Mm-hmm.
And so in a lot of instances, these single parent females are on their own struggling, trying to find a job if they have a job, trying to make ends meet, trying to find someone to look after the kids when they go out to work. Okay, and don't God forgive, they get called in the middle of the day and said the school has to end early for some reason, come and get your child. So these are real issues that women who are raising the one child have. And then I'm one of the, now here's where I agree with you, here's where we can say, I don't believe that a woman can raise a child, a boy.
We share that.
Okay? Mm-hmm. So because, you know, the boys identify, they want to identify with their father.
Right.
And so that is where I believe that what is missing,
mm-hmm.
unless you have an extended family, whereby you have a brother who takes him or a daddy who takes him, that's fine. But in a lot of instances, those are not available, not in the community we have today.
What do you think about the effects of THC on the brain of our boys?
Well, let me tell you. First and foremost, the most damaging scientific hardcore proof we have shown is that the developing brain is damaged and damaged severely and in many instances permanently in the developing brain.
Mm-hmm.
So when I hear about teenagers taking marijuana, I hold my head and I cry. I say, oh my God, what kind of society are we going to have mm-hmm. 10, 15 years from now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? In fact, this is one of the cases, to give you an analogy. I remember in the 80s, when we had the cocaine addiction, you realize that in the early 80s that the Bahamas reported the world's first epidemic of crack cocaine.
Mm.
Okay? And one of the things Dr. David Allen showed is that we were having the crack cocaine babies. And you could see the effect of the crack cocaine on those babies as they were developing, and they are born addicts from the time they take their first breath.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said, what is going to be the results on our society 15 and 20 and 30 years from now when these crack cocaine babies become adults?
Mm-hmm.
And I can say maybe he's right. These are one of the factors we're seeing in our society right now.
Mm.
Okay, so I'm going to say to you, for the young folks who are saying, listen, this thing isn't bothering me, I'm saying to you, we're going to see the result of that later on down the line.
I think there is a compilation, though, Dr. Roberts, because if we have those babies now.
I'm giving you an analogy.
Sure.
That's all. And I'm saying to you now, we know the effects, the very adverse effects in terms of physical development, but more important in terms of emotional development and psychological development, your ability to comprehend information, your ability to remember the way you used to, the potential to go to have psychosis.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I've seen a marijuana-induced psychosis.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so while we look at marijuana from the point of view on all the different spectrums and the cannabinoids and where and those where there's an indication potentially for it to have the medicinal use of marijuana, there's a place for that.
Mm-hmm.
But when you start to look at the recreational use of it, the first thing I have to stand firm as a physician and say that I'm not going to talk about the use of marijuana until we reach the stage where we're talking about adults.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing to do with it. I wouldn't take 10 minutes to discuss this. I would say, listen, you're putting your life in danger. Full stop. Now, if you want to do that, that's like you want to jump in the car and drive down Bay Street 100 miles an hour. Just go ahead. Please let me clear the road so that you're the only one on the street.
Yeah. Okay. I feel the same way about marijuana. As a matter of fact, and we're almost out of time, I don't even want to talk about marijuana use in people under the age of 25. So, I am telling you, I know young boys who obviously something has happened in their brain as a result of early marijuana use. I'm not guessing this. I know who they were. I know who they are. And I'm telling you, something in their disconnect.
Yeah.
All right?
Total disconnect.
Yeah, something in their disconnected. And the only thing that I can correlate in regards, and like they say, correlation isn't causation. But if the information suggests that there's a correlation between the causation and what I see now, then I have to investigate. And I think we ought to investigate some of these boys, because I'm telling you, I know people that I grew up with,
yeah,
right, that were perfectly brilliant, yeah, wonderful people.
Yeah.
They started, yeah, using marijuana when we were children. Yeah. Today, they are no longer the same, yeah, people. Yeah. That's all I want to say.
Yeah.
Right.
So now if you're looking at marijuana in the adults,
mm-hmm,
in its use, well, like anything else, you know, how do you define recreation, and how much is how much?
Right.
And in what conditions should you do? That's for the law to determine.
Yeah.
That's for society to determine, because they can look at the adverse effects of it.
Mm.
Okay. And as opposed to the question with regards to the tetrahydrobinol,
mm,
or THC inside the testicle, yes, it's shown very clearly that it accumulates. The evidence isn't totally clear on its direct effect with regards to fertility, but I think in time that we'll be able to see if that's the case,
mm-hmm,
with tetrahydrocannabinol.
Doc, we all the time. Hey, give me some wrapping up words. Give me some wrapping up words, and tell people how to find you as well, Doc.
Well, you know, as I said, we're talking about issues of male health.
Mm-hmm.
And
I got to get you back in here.
Yeah, and we didn't even touch about the issues of, so we got a problem. How do we solve it?
Yeah.
Okay, we got some ideas to how it came about and some of the, mm, how do we solve it, you know?
Mm.
I had the good fortune about 4 or 5 years ago when I was part of the task force, the National Task Force for Addressing Gender-Based Violence. Myself and Sandrine Patterson, we were the co-chairs, and Ruby Nottage, Justice Nottage, was the chairman of the board. And we produced a 200-page plus document.
Mm-hmm.
And we looked at the goals we wanted to achieve. And we looked at programs that we wanted to introduce, where we would have the intervention. We even went to the point of determining how to assess the successes of what we do and how to monitor. And it's unfortunate that document is on the shelf.
Mm.
And one of the programs that we had in place was Reclaiming Our Voice.
Mm.
And we were looking at going into the schools, starting from junior high, and implementing very positive programs for our boys in the school, getting them involved.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were to look at the Urban Renewal Program, compared to what we set out to do would probably account for 20 to 30% at most.
Mm-hmm.
So very comprehensive. So we need to look at this thing from a national perspective.
Mm.
This is a major problem.
Mm.
We need every NGO, we need our churches, we need families to address this problem, because as the children grow, mm, go, so the nation
goes. So goes the nation.
And as our boys go, so goes the nation.
Yeah.
And you know, we have to face the facts that we are losing our boys.
Give me your numbers, Dr. Robert, so people can find you. How do people find you, Dr. Robert?
603-1805, that's my office.
All right. You know, I want to send a special shout out before I get out of here to my friends over there at the local community watering hole. You know, it's almost the weekend. To my boy Leon and Tommy and Mackie. I come in to see you all in the show in a bit. You all stay tight. And to my other friends at my other local community watering hole, because I'm a local community ambassador, you know, Doc. Y'all stand fast. I'll be over there shortly. Anyway, y'all know me. I'm Levin Miller. This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news and smart talk. So don't move. The news, it's next. Lowry.